Hey, Joe, how you doing?
You know, Tim, I'm just fine. I'm a perfect, bland, calm individual in a monoculture world.
It seems that's what they're trying to create, isn't it?
I look out and I just see the vestige of cultural Marxism everywhere. It's a complete emotional and intellectual desert, but everyone is equal.
Yeah, that's the important thing. We're all the same. In the
yeah,
name
we're
of
all
diversity,
slaves.
We must all be the same.
Yeah, that's right. It's in the name of diversity, we have monoculture. And of course, this latest situation with the Confederate flag is quite interesting. You know, I'm just going to give you like my 40-second take on this. You know, I just think that it is a symbol of, you know, sort of ethnicity, basically. It has nothing to do with slavery, obviously. It's really just that the Confederacy is seen culturally as white males, and so it is denigrated as coming from hatred, I would say, right, is what this is given to the culture. And yet, when you look at Michelle Wallace and Alice Waters, the two black authors who, you know, create this stereotype of the African American male as violent, you look into their world and you see Gloria Steinem and the CIA. So now here on the other side of things, you know, you have this, they're taking all these flags down and it's becoming a big cultural movement. It looks fake to me. It looks like this is just another kind of cultural Marxist thing, and that both sides, both, you know, the just hate to be long-winded, but just both sides of this equation, both particularly the African-Americans and sort of the redneck white males would do really well. They would do really well to study the actual, you know, history of the culture that has led them to this point where they're at one another's throats. But at the same time, everyone is heading into the monoculture universe. So what do you think, Tim? Are we, you know, is Dixie about to be driven down forever, or will there be ongoing conflict on this issue?
Well, I think there'll be a continuing conflict. I think it's part of the dialectic, I think, that's playing out here. Of course, what we're talking about here is we're going through another spasm of iconoclasm again, usually directed against the South, the former Confederacy. We have these spate of statues being removed, statues that have been, you know, that are erected about 100 years ago, late 19th century, early 20th century, as a sort of a symbol of not only of recognition of the sacrifice that many Southerners made to defend their homeland against the invasion, but on the part of the North was a sort of a reconciliation, that letting these Southerners maintain some of their cultural heritage was necessary for the healing and reconciliation that was necessary after that horrible war that was waged here in this country to maintain the Union by force. Of course, what's occurred here is down there in New Orleans, I think the city council voted without any public input or a referendum to remove these statues of Robert E. Lee, Jefferson Davis. I think they're even targeting Joan of Arc for some reason.
Well, she was a rebel.
Yeah. So, again, it's every so often we go through these spasms of iconoclasm, I think, to destroy what's different. It's all part of a monocultural agenda. Obviously, the South is very different than the North, and these are symbols of cultural pride, of also recognition of a unique history, and that's what has to be destroyed. It's an interesting quote from 1984, and this is what George Orwell wrote. He says, "One could not learn history from architecture anymore. Then one could learn it from books, statues, inscriptions, memorial stones, names of streets. Anything that might throw light on the past had been systematically altered." And that's what's occurring. Obviously, they're in the course of destroying these, or taking down these statues, they're putting forth a very, simplistic and also, I think, inaccurate portrayal of history. It's a historiography, I think, which is inaccurate. Obviously, saying that the so-called American Civil War, the war between the states, the war to prevent Southern secession was all about slavery. It's a complete distortion of history. It's a modern interpretation that to serve contemporary political interests. The mayor down there, Landrieu, I think, obviously probably has some political ambitions, so he's trying to cater to a certain group. It's not about tolerance. It's not about fairness. It's all about either getting votes or causing more divisions within society. I heard that New Orleans was an interesting city. I've heard people talk about New Orleans. It's a port city. It's cosmopolitan in many ways, strange in many ways. It has its charms, its vices, of course, like all cosmopolitan port cities do. It's also very multicultural, and for all its problems, it's been generally peaceful. Now, all of a sudden, these people are at their throats over an issue which is pretty much irrelevant to their day-to-day lives. Obviously, removing the statue of Jefferson Davis or taking down the statue of Robert Lee isn't going to solve the high unemployment rate, the high crime rate, nor it's going to improve the schools in New Orleans or address the poverty issues. But it's an excellent way for the politicians down there to distract from their real problems. And it's also there to, I think, to divide and create more strife. I heard that Antifa was down there. These Antifa protesters, which I think are funded by George Soros. So that might give you an idea what spider is at the center of this web. Hello?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay, so that's pretty much, that's my take on it. I mean, we can re-argue the Civil War, we debate the Civil War, what it was all about, but the fact of the matter is, these things are cultural icons down there. These people, I was listening to one lady talk about how, from every year, from age 1 to 16, she took a photograph by the statue of Jefferson Davis. people will give directions by what street, go by that statue and this statue, and all this is being destroyed, and destroying whatever made New Orleans interesting, they're destroying it. I mean, that's all, that seems to be the agenda here, other than, what you said, sort of an overt attempt to go after white males again, because that's kind of what people associate the Confederacy with.
Yeah. I was interested in Landrieu. He says that the Confederate statues were monuments to murder. Right.
okay.
And he says he wants to remove from people, from a false narrative. Very sophisticated mind control, right? Mm-hmm. And so, it's just one of those things. You have to understand sort of the way that we are kept in the dark about reality to see how this all plays together. Now, I don't know Landrieu from Adam. I have no idea if he's a lifetime actor. I don't know what his background is.
Yeah, it's an old political family.
That's what I would think. I'll bet you he links into Freemasonry, but I can't. Yeah. I can't prove it. I would just bet because I know he's an old time, Louisiana political family that it is going to go back into Masonry. But if that's the case, then it's all the clearer. But it doesn't really matter because so many people have become useful idiots swept up in the momentum. And like you say, the problem is that when you remove, something is not something just iconic, but is just structurally as part of history as a Confederate president and, the fact that the Confederacy had individuals who were, in its leadership, you just take away people's ability to know what, came in before them, right? It goes, what this goes to is the atomization of society. It goes to the idea that none of us have any history at all. Mm-hmm. All we really have is the state, the monoculture. And the state really doesn't want us to have any history that's unique, any ethnicity that's unique, any political ideas that are unique. And, you know, this is what I would ask particularly of, like, the people who are, you know, asking that the statue be taken down and supporting it. You have to remember what this will all lead to for yourself, right? They think, well, we're removing a tribute to racism when this statue comes down. But really what you're removing is a future where you might have, you know, a history for yourself, because it isn't just going to stop with the white male, right? The process just rolls forward and you end up with a completely atomized monoculture. I mean, there won't even be any sexuality that's identifiable, right? When this all gets done. So,
because it'll offend somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it went, you know, well, this is how they are able to get these things into, you know, the kind of cultural mind, without just being rejected out of hand as being absurd, right? It's like when they broke up the ethnic communities in the cities following World War II. The whole idea that they were promoting integration by the bringing about the influx of you know, undereducated and impoverished African Americans right into these areas, right? Mm-hmm. This was insane. Anyone with a clear mind could go, wait a second, you know, all you're going to do is drive the whites out to the middle class. But you see, that's the point.
Yeah.
Right. Break up the ethnic neighborhood, get them all out there into the cookie cutter world to start the monoculture, right?
Yeah, because the deracinated suburbanites aren't going to care at all about Southern heritage. You even have any, even if exactly. you're from the North, you might have some sense of heritage, but if you're, you know, deracinated suburbanite, you're going to think, well, who are these, you know, retrograde hicks?
You won't have any European history whatsoever.
Yeah.
There was European history in the ethnic neighborhood. They knew where they came from.
Oh,
they
had
ways of talking and different ideas about right and wrong. And you actually had culture, very strong culture. And of course, you had high levels of family production. And then, you know, now we're at a point where you have the deracinated middle class, which, of course, now is just basically disintegrating. It has no economic structure any longer. And all of the children, the jobs available for its children are bartenders or waitresses. The family production is just at an all-time low. And it all goes right back to this insertion of the monoculture on top of European American. And I get so many people saying, you know, you're focused on the plight of the European. You know, I'm not. I'm also, believe me, concerned about the African American, who has been just a pawn in the Masonic, you know, restructuring of America, right? Just mm-hmm. look at how you know, Steinem helped bring about the destruction of the African American family. So we've all been attacked, and they create this dialectic, like you said earlier. It's a false dialectic. It's just meant for people that are not inside the Masonic guild, that we don't have any identity that might help us organize. We're all just, you know, pawns, and without any history and without any power, and we're just basically looking to the state to take care of us. And who owns the state? Not us, you see.
And it really, really enabled this was the destruction of the South, the impoverishment, the immiseration of the South because of the invasion that occurred during the Civil War, the destruction there, because that's when the South became poor, and South became a source of cheap raw materials and cheap labor, which they were able to, you know, send North when they wanted to break up the ethnic neighborhoods in the North, and also weaken the labor unions to change the situation up there. So in each case, you have brutal, you know, social engineering occurring, all in the name of integration and racial harmony, but it's anything but. And that's the thing. That's the trick. That's the hoodwink here.
That's the hoodwink, exactly.
You know, it's not for your own good. And there, you know, there's an odd situation now. I think it was in New Orleans where some black Southerners showed up to protest the removal of statues, and there were being glass bottles being thrown out of them from white college students.
Yeah, I mean that's a great, you know, the African Americans were trying to basically defend history, and the culturally Marxist kind of robots were, you know, opposing them, even though if they would just stand back and think about what was going on, the irony of it, they would just recognize immediately they were being controlled.
Yeah. And there's an odd story, and I think there was a Civil War museum in Georgia that had to close because the city government had made them remove. They decided to close because the city government said they have to take down the Confederate flags. It's a Civil War museum. So even the argument of the argument says all these flags should be in museums. Okay.
Yeah.
They put them in a museum, then they say, oh no, they can't be there because, you know, they're offensive. But it's a museum. It's about the so-called American Civil War. But I mean, it's like, you know, if you wanted to get like models of airplanes from World War II, and you couldn't get a German one because it had a swastika on it.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
You know, yeah. So the public needs to try to make some sense out of its history. You know, like, how did the Civil War actually come about? How did World War I come about?
Yes.
You know, like in the Civil War, you know, you see this weird, absolutely bizarre character, Albert Pike. After Lincoln is assassinated, and I've actually, I don't have it in front of me, but I've done some research into this, and there really is primary documentation that Pike was there with Johnson, the new president, basically giving him orders as though he was, you know, in charge, right?
That explains why Albert Pike is the only Confederate officer to have a statue in Washington, D.C.,
Yeah, how come they don't take down Pike's statue? I mean, so the public is just getting hoodwinked, like you say, and it's you know you have the Masons; they were clearly involved, but then of course it branched out: Skull and Bones, Bohemian Grove, the CIA, you know, CFR, and you get you know, offshoots because they needed to rebrand the project from time to time so the public wouldn't catch on. But, you know, I have said that I have thought for some time that World War I and World War II were just artificial, that they were basically constructions where both sides of the political process were controlled, and the whole point was just to hold the populations in place while they were slaughtered. You know, so they would, you know, you'd have the Masons on one side of the trench demanding that you walk into the automatic weapon fire. And on the other side, the German Masons were doing the same thing, you know, to their group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people have asked that I put evidence for this, and I have some. I have, like, analytic. I will have to get into it one day. But it's not as clear as I'd like it to be, but it's clear enough. And I think that what we have is a template to sort of start doing the process of really trying to understand our history. In other words, I'm not saying I can answer all the questions, or you can answer all the questions, or this show can answer all the questions, but I think we can at least put out a template so that people can use it to make some progress. And I would suggest, you know, when you look at this, you know, removing Lee and Jefferson David, these statues, and when you look at Landreau's, the mayor's weird sophistry, right, when he tries to explain why it's going on, I think that this should be looked at in the context of the Civil War being fake, you know?
Yeah. And also,
we didn't need this war. This war was for some other purpose than what was given to us. We were lied to from tip to stern.
And it skews history because the Baltimore, I think Baltimore, this mayor has come out for removing some of the Confederate statues there because, although Maryland stayed within the Union, it only stayed within the Union because it was occupied. The Maryland state legislature was shut down, and the mayor of Baltimore was arrested, you know, by Lincoln. And but if you start moving, you know, if you go into Baltimore, you see these statues, you see these Confederate statues, like, oh, you know, a curious person might say, that's funny, I thought Maryland was in the Union. Then you say, well, I'll look into this. You might learn a little history and know that the war wasn't as popular as you might have thought in the North, that it was only successfully prosecuted because Lincoln resorted to dictatorial and tyrannical measures. So this is history. You get a chance. It's a teachable moment. But no, they're going to tear the statue down. You know, anyway, I think it was the where the Union Army marched. I think the Massachusetts. They're marching down from Massachusetts through Baltimore, and there was a riot. The Marylanders attacked the Union Army because they were headed down to invade the South. That's how unpopular war was in Maryland. You know, but no. Again, if you start, you know, if you engage in this iconoclasm and destroy these statues and stuff, that's a further step and just dumbing everyone down. And you know, again, it's a rich history. It's a complex history. They want to dumb it every
and
down.
It's a history that should be investigated. And,
yes.
And to investigate, you need to understand the details of it. You need to have the history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the monoculture has no history. And I think one of the things that they are intending for the monoculture numbed mind is that those individuals cannot go back and do a review of what happened. I mean, when you look at the Holocaust of the Europeans from the Civil War all the way through the end of World War II, I mean, was this a complete just catastrophic failure of the political class somehow? Or was there something in back of all that?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the history to do the investigation from, then you're basically just going to believe, you know, what's given to you by the media. And then now you're in the monoculture world where basically, you know, the what is culturally appropriate is Miley Cyrus and Kim Kardashian.
Yeah. And we can when you look at the destruction, what's going on in the South, not just destruction that occurred during the war, the psychological warfare that it also involved, but the destruction of these statues, the destruction of the Southern identity is you can liken it to World War II, the destruction of German cities when it served no strategic goal in the war itself, but that was essential in the psychological decapitation of the German people as a German as an identity.
Right. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, just, you know, if you look at cities like, like old cities like Cologne and Dresden and Hamburg, you know, these cities that have been around for millennia and defined what Germans were and what they did. And they were just these beautiful cities just destroyed and, you know, immolated.
They were firebombed and there was no military purpose. It was just the genocide of the population. Churchill, the Masonic monster, was saying, "Oh, this is total war, and there's just something wrong with the German people in general that has to be destroyed." I mean, it was just literally raw racism.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that, like, with the Civil War, you know, a starting point is probably the tyranny of Lincoln. You know, what was in back of it? Was Lincoln just another, you know, Mason officer with a pistol in the back of the infantry troops demanding they march into, you know, what was a planned culling of population? That's you know, would be a perspective that someone could use who knows history to, like, go in and start this analysis that we need to do, which I hope, you know, our show encourages. And then you mentioned, you know, Dresden and Hamburg. We learn about the German, you know, kind of the psychology. We learn about the evil nature of the people following World War II through basically a media system that was headed by Ewan Cameron. If someone uses Wikipedia, you can just start the process of understanding just how completely Ewan Cameron dominated the kind of the information that reached Western civilization following World War II about the Germans, right? Now, this is the biggest red flag I have ever encountered in sort of the analytic approach to history. I have never seen anything that is weirder or more suspicious. Because once MKUltra was outed, right, because of the discovery of the pay requisitions, and you could start linking doctors into different projects, and then you could start actually seeing that some of this, what had been done to individuals, they couldn't deny it any longer. Ewan Cameron was discovered to be doing the psychic driving experiments, right? Now, these experiments involved putting people into chemical comas for a month, giving them electroshock during this period, and then determining if they could evaporate the mind of the individual. And these are not people who are, like, you know, incarcerated. These are just citizens who come in suffering from depression, and were given Ewan Cameron as their psychiatrist. So my point is, you know, you get this, you know, Cameron is actually talking about kind of the racial psychology of the Germans, right? He's giving this information to the public. How is it the case that this guy, who is one of the only outed psychopaths engaged in human, degenerate experimentation, would then be the one to bring information about the German people to the West, right? See, it can't be circumstance. I'm just saying analytically, it throws the whole World War II narrative into just complete, you know, chaos as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it demands that more investigation get done. But, you know, it's the same thing with the Civil War, right? Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same thing. What in the hell happened? How is it the case that the end result of what should have been simply a process of negotiation ended up with the populations basically being held in place and driven into one another and being slaughtered? You know, this isn't some kind of, in my mind, just an organic political process that ends up with everyone being dead. I think the Civil War should be, you know, investigated for essentially being another fraud. Right.
Yeah, that, but I guess boiling it down to just slavery prevents any investigation.
Exactly.
It becomes a moralistic
When you get rid of these statues, and then you have the people, you know, protesting, and they go, "Well, here it's this narrative of hate." And notice that Landrieu talks about peeling away from a false narrative. I mean, this is mind control, right? That's why the guy. I don't trust this guy at all. I think you're going to find a nasty little Masonic family background.
Well, I mean, false narrative. That's ridiculous. I mean, just first of all, slavery itself, it became a prominent interpretation of the Civil War. That type of, that, you know, today's current historiography of the Civil War really came on in the 1960s, and because it coincided with the Civil Rights Movement. So it was an interpretation of the war to advance a certain contemporary political agenda, whatever you think of that agenda. But it wasn't an accurate interpretation. Basically, it was the powers that be reinterpreting history so they could shape, you know, control the present and shape the future. It's the same old Orwellian trick. Prior to the 1960s, slavery was considered a issue of the war, not the issue. So basically, it was the contemporary politics of the 60s which formed that interpretation. I mean, because everyone knows that Lincoln said himself that he, you know, if he could preserve the Union by preserving slavery, he'd do it. If he could preserve the Union by ending slavery in one part and preserving another, he'd do it. It was about maintaining the Union. That was his objective. And he also,
can I interject? Yeah. Question is why? Yeah. I mean, a union maintained by force, it's oxymoronic.
Yeah, it's right? Like a marriage maintained by force.
Yeah, I mean, what is the moral basis for his desire?
Yeah.
Right. You see, this is it, you know, and you get the battle hymn of the Republic whenever, you know, they have, you know, the show, the big statue of the monster in his little Masonic temple there in Washington, D.C. But Lincoln has to be looked at not from the slavery angle. That's the narrative they want you to use, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the question with Lincoln is why was he willing to kill everybody to maintain the Union? In other words, the whole purpose of the Union is to provide a safe place to inhabit for the people, right? Why have the Union? What's the point of the Union?
It's like
and so he says, no, we have to keep the Union in place, and so we're gonna have to kill everybody. That's like the Vietnam, you know, in order to save the village, we had to destroy it.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah.
That very thing.
So Lincoln is a fake, and that you can tell the guy is a fraud because this is why he's been made an icon.
Well, that's why it's considered, like, it's the old Republic and then it's the antebellum America and post-war America. And since then, America is politically, at least philosophically, has made very little sense because you have this cognitive dissonance of what's the nature of the Republic, the nature of the Union. And you have all these these post-war amendments that were passed by states that were said, in order to be a state, you have to pass these amendments. But only a state can ratify an amendment. So how can you you know, well, obviously, just it's completely illegal. Just the, if it works, okay. And let's not talk about it. And we'll concoct some sort of justification for it later on. We won't teach people history, and they'll be ignorant about the constitutional process that's supposed to control the government. It doesn't, of course. It's just a, you know, as George Bush says, just a GD piece of paper, scrap of paper, because it doesn't enforce itself. But I mean, just look at history. The first 13th Amendment. We all know about the 13th Amendment banning involuntary servitude, at least, you know, private involuntary servitude. The government maintains that privilege. But the first proposed 13th Amendment was the Corwin Amendment, and that was actually supported by Lincoln. It was passed in 1860. That would have preserved slavery in perpetuity if the South stays in the Union. So they were perfectly willing. And the fact that that didn't keep the South from seceding suggests that that wasn't the only issue for the South. A lot of other issues, of course, you know, the tariff, just the whole thing about being completely different than the North, you know.
I mean, well, they had political control. I mean, this guild had control of the political system in the North. The South looked a little tenuous, and they didn't want them to leave for fear that, well, they, who knows if we could control that. So this is the Union they're trying to protect. It's the psychological dictatorship, the Masonic dictatorship that basically was run out of Washington by a small guild with the control over the newspapers and whatnot. And I mean, it's like if you go back into these families, you just get Mason after Mason. So this little secret society didn't want to lose its control over an area. And so they said, well, we'll just reduce all the population. Mm-hmm. And then we won't have to worry about it. I mean, that's my take. Ask me to prove it, it would be difficult. But that would be, I think, the most logical framework. And it would be the one, you know, gosh, you know, the people that I would really like to talk to are the young African Americans that are being spun this story and then are relating to the statues with hatred, right?
Yeah.
I would really like to get a chance to go through the history of the whole thing so that they can see that they were manipulated in the same way that the poor white people were manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And this is, there is actually a common interest that we share, all of us, right? The African American slaves and the working class of whites that were shoved into the battlefield to get slaughtered, right? We are the groups that should unify, and we should unify around an investigation into history. That's what we should be doing. And that's what they're trying to do with, you know, they're trying, you know, the like getting rid of the statues. It's a twofer. They get to recreate, you know, some ethnic tension and hatred. And then they can also move toward the monoculture,
yeah,
where there is no history, where it's all gone. We're just members of the state, and it's perfect, and take drugs and get fed the, you know, the GMO food, and your children are autistic.
Well, so, if you look at this with the Irish, how the Irish were treated. The Irish, many Irish, you know, came from Ireland that was being victimized by the Freemasonic British Empire. So they show up here, you know, in the Northeast, in New York, they immediately, join up in the Union Army, given a, you know, offered a code and a free
meal. They had nowhere to go. They had not. They were literally taken off the boat and conscripted. Well, they weren't conscripted, but they were. They were offered food.
Yeah.
And a uniform, and they just joined up, and the next 2 weeks later, they're dead.
Yep.
Right.
You know.
So it was a population reducing machine, and so we're still in the system. You see, that's why you get people like I don't know Landrieu from Adam, but man, it just smells rotten to me. I just smell a Masonic rat. You know, I just, when I look at this statement and, you know, about, you know, a false narrative. I mean, look, this guy, he would not come up with such language on his own. I mean, this is just ridiculous. So this is a program. This is, you know, it's just a way to indoctrinate and intellectually dominate. And so, you know, let's hope that if we give people just the question about revisiting the history from the perspective of, we were basically fooled into the conflict. We were tricked into it. It was a narrative. There was an agenda that wasn't given to us. And the agenda was the conclusion. In other words, everyone goes, gee, you know, it's just, here we are, everyone's dead. What a disaster. What a mistake. War was a mistake, right? It's just always a mistake. But the problem is it keeps happening. And so that's why you need to go to a little different level of investigation, right, as to why it keeps happening.
Mm-hmm. And one thing is we're seeing why the South is always being targeted for this stuff, this type of cultural destruction, iconoclasm, is because, well, one thing is the idea of America as sort of a constitutional republic. Mm-hmm. That really had its origins in the South. The Constitution itself, you know, was pretty much a Southern creation, and the Southerners pretty much won, and at least they won at the Constitutional right. Convention with the Jefferson and Madison, and these guys had pretty much beaten out Hamilton and Adams. And if you look at the political domination of the South up until the 1850s, end of the 1850s, so this is a way to destroy Southern power. And even the Republicans never cared about blacks. They cared about votes, getting votes. I mean, Lincoln's own state, Illinois, had a law that said you couldn't be a free black without posting a $10,000 bond. You couldn't be represented in court. And the reason why the North had such hatred of slavery had nothing to do with the moral issue. It was the economic and political issue, and also the cultural issue. They didn't like slavery because if you had slavery, you had black people. How people looked at things back then. It's just how it was. Well, it wasn't a moral issue.
Yeah, I mean, the integration was just preposterous because the cultures were so vastly different, mm-hmm. because they'd have different economic trajectories, different education. The idea of integration wasn't really even on the – no one was interested in that at that point. What the African Americans wanted was freedom. But, the thing is that the idea that, somehow like the Democratic – party, or excuse me, the Republican Party in the North was somehow interested in the freedom, right, of these people. Just look at Albert Pike's relationship to President Johnson. And let me point something out here, Jim. So Pike is like the head Freemason in the United States, but underneath him, you've got, all of these guys that are Masonic industrialists and traders. This is the combine, the American version of the East-West Trading Company, right? Mm-hmm. That's who, the Forbes and, Rom and these guys, so it's just the combine. They're the American version, but they're engaged in this like vast trading system. Okay. Now, what do they trade in? Well, they trade in slaves, mm-hmm. and opium to turn people into slaves, right? When the Chinese attempted to rebel against the opium addiction, the person who was sent in with the gunboats to kill everybody was Lord Palmerston. He was the head Freemason of the Orient, right? So what do you have? Well, you've got this Masonic Rothschild East-West Trading Company in league with the trading companies in the United States, with the Forbes family and all of these blue bloods. These are the groups that are supposedly promoting the Civil War to free the slaves. It doesn't make much sense to me. I don't see that. I mean, maybe there was another reason that, like Albert Pike and his crew wanted to have the war, right? Because Masonry has always been involved with the actual selling of slaves. That's what mm-hmm. it does. So it's, so this is just, again, it's a point of beginning analysis that I would hope that, we can create, is that people should look at this. They should go, well, if the Republican Party was opposed to slavery and Lincoln was actually just trying to keep the Union together, why did Albert Pike seem to have a kind of domination over Andrew Johnson following Lincoln's assassination? What is the Masonic underlying influence in all this? And then when you look out, you go out into the branches of Masonry and you see Masonry's benefiting from the selling of slaves and opium. Well, then you have to ask yourself the question, well, what the hell? I mean, this whole thing looks fake, right? So, these are the fingerprints that we have that, can lead us to basically have some information about the crime, but they're just the beginning. We have to dig deeper and harder and start exposing what happened to us.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's, again, this attempt to destroy Southern identity is an attempt to impose a monoculture, to destroy the idea of regional or local identity and these things. And this is an impediment to global monoculture, globalism. We've seen this attempt in Europe to destroy the ethnic-based European state with weaponized migration. Here in the United States, of course, as we mentioned in the mid part of the 20th century, there was a concerted effort to destroy the ethnic urban neighborhoods, to create suburbia, to create a deracinated white middle class. So we could enter into this phase where the deracinated white middle class has no identity other than consumerism. So they don't know what to make of this, of what's going on. They have very little sympathy what's going on down south. They think there's a bunch of retrograde hicks, complaining, about, some old battle flags that are irrelevant. Ethnicity, localism, local patriotism, these things are firewalls, barriers to globalism. And this is why they have to be knocked down, everything laid flat,
And they're breaking them down one after another. Yeah. And, we really need to kind of engender in the African Americans in the United States a higher level of concern about kind of what they've been given. I've been looking, as into Gloria Steinem, and I could see Michelle Wallace with Black Macho was fake. I mean, that was just a hit piece on the African American male, and the idea was to give support to the welfare state, right? Okay, so it's very clear. And then Michelle Wallace actually made a statement that's very significant. She said, "I was breastfed the book." Breastfed. So you can see that it's fake, that she was just a Ms. Magazine cut out, right, to give a black face to a perspective that was going to be used to try to sell this idea of the welfare state being something that is beneficial to the African-American community, which had positive demographics in just every imaginable aspect, education, family development, wealth, reduction in violence since the end of the Civil War, just about. And now, of course, all these turned south. Everything went to hell in a handbasket. It was just an accident. Just like all the dead people at the end of the Civil War, just a damn accident. We tried our best, but it just failed, and we wiped out the African American culture and family. But then when you look, I was looking at, that's interesting. And Steinem's relationship to the author of Black Macho is very important. But then I found, wait a second, Steinem also was involved with Alice Waters, but the author of A Color Purple.
Oh, Walker. Alice Walker.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And they had this longstanding relationship. And, you have to wonder now, right, in lieu of the relationship with Michelle Wallace, who is breastfed Black Macho, to what extent was Alice Walker breastfed The Color Purple?
Yeah.
Because if you look at The Color Purple, it's very suspicious, very much, the black male doesn't come out looking too good, does he? Right? Kind of a violent individual, full of hate. The black woman is very solid and, where that becomes in once you have the context of Steinem just lying her head off as a CIA agent, right? And trying to lie away all of the areas where she's breaking up the family and destroying, she's just one woman band of destruction to the American family. Then when you look at this relationship to Waters, it becomes really, really troubling.
Walker.
I'm sorry. Yeah, getting older.
You're a Pink Floyd fan. Think of what?
Yeah, but anyway, you see my point is that this is the kind of thing that we need to do. Is we have to not just go into our history, but go into the personalities to try to determine who of these individuals are lifetime actors. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll just go out on a limb and I'll say, people who hold us in position for mass slaughter, like Grant and Robert E. Lee. The first thing I want to do is find out the Masonic background. Mm-hmm. I mean, with Sherman, it's known. There's a picture of Grant and Sherman following the war in Egypt, looking for a Masonic obelisk that they could. I swear, it's real. They were going to bring one back and hoist it up, you know, to commemorate Sherman's march to the sea.
Oh, great!
It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
But
isn't that why Napoleon went to Egypt too?
Yeah. Well, of course.
The strange invasion.
Yeah. I mean, I think that whole, you know, connection comes through the Masonic, you know, tradition. And that's why they go down there. And anyway, it's like when the Knights Templar returned to the Temple of Jerusalem and spent a decade underneath it trying to dig something out. You know, that whole region has this.
One thing that's interesting is you mentioned, of course, Michelle Wallace and this black macho being breastfed. That book about the myth of black macho is that these figures are often props, or they're puppets. And I was reading about Martin Luther King, and his handler was Stanley Levinson. And there's been some speculation Stanley Levinson was a true author of letters from a Birmingham jail.
Yeah.
And some of his activism. Of course, he was active in the South, and this isn't to say that there were legitimate grievances that Black Americans had in the South, especially regarding Jim Crow and some of the laws down there. But this was a situation that was being exploited, particularly by the Jewish elite. And this goes as the Jewish assault on the South. If you look at it deeper, it's nothing to do with their progressive or the sympathy towards the blacks.
It was none of that.
It was the Black Jewish Alliance was, you know, Jews using blacks to destroy the South. And why was this? And this goes back as to 1913, the Leo Frank trial in Atlanta, Georgia, when he sexually assaulted and murdered a 13-year-old girl named Mary Fagan, a poor girl that worked in his factory. And he was convicted of the murder and sentenced to hang. And all of a sudden, the Jewish press in New York, the North, got behind him because Leo Frank happened to be the president of the local chapter of B'nai B'rith, Jewish Freemasonry.
What a shock.
Yeah. My point is, this was the birth of the South being tagged with anti-Semitism. And prior to that, the South had very benign views Jews. They had worked with the Jews because Jews were so involved in the slave trade, but also, you know, people like Judah P. Benjamin, their Secretary of the Treasury, their Vice President, and their Secretary of State, was a Jew, the highest ranking Jew, and there were no high ranking Jews in the Union side. But all of a sudden, they mobilized against the South, and this became this 50-year war against the South, culminating in the Civil Rights Movement. This also culminated in the creation of the Anti-Defamation League.
Well, let me just add to this. So you're absolutely right. I mean, this whole vein needs sunlight put on it. You have the bizarre double nephew of Sigmund Freud, Edward Bernays.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Bernays is kind of, to me, he's like a Lincoln in the fact that his whole life is so contradictory, it just begs investigation. So, you know, Bernays is the one who actually started the NAACP. Right. He was the founder of it while he was doing all of, you know, like getting fluoride in the water. Feminism got rolling. And then with his, torch of freedom, which he was trying to get women to also smoke cigarettes, he was sexualizing the culture. You know, he brought out the first really explicit sexual media. But then he had time to set up the NAACP. Now you'd go, well, gee, you know, Bernays, he's probably like really into, you know, like, helping poor people, helping these people of color, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's Bernays. He's, you know, setting up the old NAACP. Oh, but wait a second. Over here, he's working for United Fruit. He's overthrowing the democratically, you know, elected, dark skin individual and getting and returning the whole nation of these natives right to slavery.
I know. Yeah.
Well, what happened here? Gee, Edward, I thought, you know, we were like working here on this integration thing and everything is just this. And that, but over here, suddenly now the Masonic owners of United Fruit, you know, they don't want to like have any kind of democracy. So it's over here. You start working. You see, this is the thing. Is that when you this is why don't tear down those statues, right?
Yeah.
Leave them up until we understand what is in back of them.
Because the statues spark a conversation about history.
Exactly. And that's why they want to take them down. You see, this is the whole point. Those statues remind us of a history that is simply a question mark, mm-hmm. and everyone should be trying to answer it. You know, and like
it's also beautiful art, by the way. These are sculptures at a time when Americans could produce good art. You know, it's tasteful art, by the way.
Think back to those days. But it's, you know, it's like I think one of the best insights that I've been given in the last like couple years was when you were explaining how the ethnic neighborhoods were targeted with Sergeant Shriver.
Oh yeah, yeah, the Blackstone Rangers.
And I had never, you know, there's so much to know, and it's humbling, you know, because you try to find out all these things, and then there's just this incredibly important structure, and you just never even seen it. But thank heavens there's people like you to bring information out.
Well, that's like when you're talking to like your typical white middle-class American about these things. Of course, they're carrying a heavy load of pathological white guilt because they've been trained, even the conservative ones, you know, non-conservative ones. And so they don't know what to make of things. They don't know that they themselves have been guinea pigs. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that you're a suburbanite means why did you end up there? Why aren't you there? Why are you here instead of there? Well, how come you have no ethnic identity? Is this natural? Yeah. Is this a good thing? Oh, is ethnic pride a bad thing? Why is it only bad for white people? Well, white, is that really ethnicity? No, white itself is a deracinated concept. So those out there talking about white pride and white nationalism, the only problem is white guys have no identity because they're not sort of Irish or German or Polish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it's like the African-American sort of political revival that was taking place in the 60s, early 70s. You know, they were given the concept that there could be, like, violence and the freedom to have their own drug industry, right, with the government producing it all. And this was, you know, a kind of rebellion for them. Mm-hmm. And they didn't realize that just like the white hippie, you know, they had been led into a culturally debased corral, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were both, again, just as we had been in the Civil War, groups that should have been aligned, that should have been working with one another to try to get to the bottom of what was going on and how we were being influenced and how our behavior was being generated. Instead, we were kind of at each other's throats to some extent, you know, that the particularly the African American male was, you know, through Michelle Wallace and the welfare state, was put into this condition where violence was a kind of freedom, you know, a rebellion, right?
Yes.
And suddenly started, you know, they were standing up. They wouldn't let the man push them around anymore. And, you know, they took advantage of all of the righteous emotion and indignation that had come from slavery and from a disadvantage. And they twisted it into a behavioral form that was only going to lead them further and further away from the truth about their history and from a real future. So, you know, what can I say? You know, when you get to these statues, it just breaks my heart. Not that they're taking them down. It's just that they're doing it as they're continuing the basically the evaporation of our capacity to think clearly.
Yeah.
And that's the part that hurts me, you know, when I see it.
There's an interesting article I read. I think I found this on the League of the South. I was just reading about on this topic. And I think this would be a good segue into discussion about Brzezinski because it gets in the... He wrote, what was America like when Jeffersonian Southerners ran the country? Jefferson ran on a platform of abolishing all inland federal taxes. From his election to 1861, Americans paid no inland federal taxes except for the cost of the War of 1812. The great bulk of the federal revenue came from foreigners who paid a tax to enter the American market. By 1835, the Jeffersonians had abolished the National Bank, the equivalent of abolishing the corrupt and corrupting Federal Reserve today. From then until 1861, the central government was out of debt except for the Mexican War, which was less than the federal budget for 1858. This Southern-led Jeffersonian America was a remarkable place. Americans lived nearly free of federal taxes and federal debt. Today, Americans are burdened with taxes, onerous regulations, and grown under a $20 trillion debt. This is possible because, having rejected state nullification and secession, the central government can define the limits of its own power. In Lincoln's day, the power was seized by the Yankee nationalist oligarchy. Today, it is in the hands of a globalist oligarchy, which confronts both political parties, or I'm sorry, which controls both political parties. So here we're talking about globalist oligarchy.
That couldn't be clearer. That's a really thought out, a piece of verbiage. That's really a great, sort of platform for people to grasp. And to when you kind of juxtapose those ideas next to, Landro's taken down of the statues, I think, the public can see, hey, we're being hoodwinked.
Yeah.
Once again,
I imagine the Landru family is probably descend from a bunch of carpetbaggers that came down in the 1870s or something.
Probably Masonic carpetbaggers.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, anyway, it's like, I have to, it's a shame. I got to cut this short because I was afraid of, because once I get into these things, this is what I live for, is being able to like get my mind clear, which this show helps me do. And so, next week, let's go into Brzezinski.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you said, this is a perfect segue. This is absolutely, because now we can go into the current, way that they're conditioning us.
Yeah, America fell under the control of a national oligarchy in the 19th century. Now it's under the control of a globalist oligarchy. So.
Right.
Okay,
and
Joe.
Brzezinski is the guy.
Thank
you, brother. I will talk to you soon.
Okay, take it easy.
Thanks, everybody.
Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Yes, bye-bye.